All right, so now we're dealing with the five pillars of Islam. The notion of five pillars is a typical of Islam, whereas we in Judaism don't have anything like 13 principles of faith until Islam comes around. The Muslims tend to like, they want things quantifiable and they count and they have, you know, five pillars of Islam, they have five pillars of belief, of creed, they have various kinds of countings of that. And it's was picked up on by Jewish medieval thinkers as well. So we get similar kinds of processes. But the five pillars of Islam is typical, and also it's not found in the Quran. There's no reference to five pillars of Islam. There's no reference to five times a day prayer. These are things that are that come later. So I thought we would take a look at each one and look and see some of the proof texts in the Quran and maybe in post-Quranic tradition, but mostly Quran for these, and see how they relate to Jewish parallels with Islam. So how they're similar and how they're different. So the first one is Iman, which is Emunah, same word, same root. And the statement of Iman in Arabic is, and you can read the Hebrew along as I read the Arabic, La ilaha en el, lo el, ilaha, ela, illa, Allah. So La ilaha illallah, Muhammad, Rasul, Allah. So a shaliach, is a Rasul is like an apostle or somebody who sent a messenger. So now, there's a lot of evidence that the shahada, which is the witnessing, a shahid is a witness, right? It also is a martyr. A shahid is a woman who witnesses through his very being or her very being the true meaning of God and is willing to die for it. So the word for, you know, Kiddush Hashem is shahada. And a mushtahid is someone who basically martyrs oneself, and a shaheed is also one who's been martyred. So the shahada is the statement of witnessing. And you notice I have here in English or in Latin letters shahada or shahadatain. Shahadatain is shahadatayim, is the double shahada. So the double shahada is, the first part is there's no God but God, and the second part, and Muhammad is his messenger.
Technical. You have these lines on top, and you have some other designs. I'm saying, in the whole, when you transcribe the Arabic, I'm not sure what the signs you use and signify when I read the text for the pronunciation.
You mean the bars and the little apostrophes and things on the top?
I suppose they are sort of ayahs or olives or something, but the bars, yes.
Well, yes, so the little bars on the top are vowels, that are the ah sound, and little bars on the bottom, although there aren't any here, but sometimes they're on the top, but they also function like they're on the bottom, are e sound. And the little W, that's a dagesh. That's a dagesh over a letter. They do a dagesh over a letter. Mm-hmm. So illa, you see that's that first one. We're moving from right to left.
No, I'm not talking about the Arabic. I'm talking about the transcription.
Oh, the transcription. Oh, that's a standard Semitic's way to do it. So a bar over a vowel is a long sound. So ah is instead of ah. Right, and an apostrophe going this way is an aleph.
Yeah.
An apostrophe going this way is an ayin.
Yes.
Okay. Right, and a bar over an I is an e sound. You know, e is e. And Arabic has long vowels and short vowels, but they're the same sound. It's not like in English and diphthong anyway. So there's e and there's e. There's a and u and u. And technically in Arabic there are only three vowel sounds. And that's a, e, and u. There's no o, there's no a, you know, no u, no umlaut, none of that.
But a is many times there, or is it only in modern?
That's all dialectical. In fact, it probably was also dialectical in the ancient times, but it's been standardized into three possible sounds. There are diphthongs. You can do a-e, and it becomes I, right? But there's no O in Arabic, no O sound. But in modern Arabic, there's O all the time. People use O all the time, but not in classical.
So you have a Yom al-Din?
Yom, yeah.
And you have Yom al-Akhir.
Yom al-Akhir.
Yom al-Akhir. Okay.
Yeah. But actually, it's not Yom al-Din, but it's complicated. It doesn't really matter. It's Yom ad-Din. In fact, the Lamed, this is actually worth talking about because it's just like Hebrew. What was the original theoretical definite article in Hebrew? Old, old theoretical definite article. The. How was it spelled? You know, right?
Simple, remember.
We have ha, right?
Yeah.
But what else? We have hal, dagesh.
Hal.
Yeah, hal. So the theory is that it was hal.
Yes.
Is
the really the dagesh of the article.
The lamed fell out. Mm-hmm. And when you have a letter falling out, you need to mark it. So that's a dagesh. That's why you say habbait, and you don't say havait.
Right.
Right?
Was
right? So it was halvite. It's theory. We don't have any inscription or evidence to suggest, but we know that something happened because we always have that dagesh. And the only reason we don't have the dagesh is in guttural letters we don't have the dagesh for the simple reason that Hebrew speakers were lazy and they didn't want to have to work hard to pronounce an ayin with a dagesh on it. You didn't want to do that, so we don't even say ayin without a dagesh, right?
Right.
You put a kamatzin beforehand, but that's much later.
So in Arabic, the lamed falls out in front of moon letters, and it stays in front of sun letters, and a dalid is a moon letter. So you don't say al-din, you say ad-din. You say ash-shams for shemis. There are some letters that retain the lamed and some letters that didn't retain the lamed, and they separate the two by saying there's sun letters and moon letters. That's all. It's a mnemonic, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The moon is qamar, and you say al-qamar, and sun is shams, and you say ash-shams. You don't say al-shams. So that might have been the paradigm. Okay. Al-qamar, ash-shams. So, it's complicated language, but probably not more complicated than Dutch. The difference is that you know Dutch, you don't know Arabic.
It is the difference.
At least to some extent.
Okay, so back to the Shahada. This is interesting for us. Because there's evidence that originally the witnessing of God was without Muhammad. Just there's no God but God. No God but Allah. And that later, and Muhammad was his prophet. One of the reasons why, there's a lot of evidence for that. One is there's some references in the hadith that says when people wanted to make the witnessing, they just said there's no God but God. They didn't say anything about Muhammad. Another suggestion or support for this suggestion is that it's called the double Shahada. If it were really just the Shahada, the witnessing of God, if it was the, what do you call Shema Yisrael, the watchword of our faith, we would have said there's no God but God and Muhammad is his prophet. But it said it's the double watchword of our faith, which suggests that maybe there was a single watchword first and then a second piece was added, which also supports the Donner thesis that I subscribe to, which is the original Muslims just thought they were monotheists. They didn't think they were different than Muslims, than Jews or Christians or Muslims. They were all part of the same category, and that there later on there was an attempt to separate from the larger monotheistic community.
And then Muhammad Rasulullah comes in the place of that.
It
signifies that they're now different monotheists?
Right, right. Because Jews and Christians won't accept Muhammad as a prophet. And there was
the constellation is almost like Muhammad would be God's messenger, like Jesus was the son messenger.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with parallel, which may have
helped
to get the Christians in.
In?
Well, into Islam. Because it was sort of
No, not at all. It would reject the Christians, because Christians would never accept Muhammad as a prophet. I think.
Well, you have a constellation of God and manifestation on earth. Like the Pope, you know.
So it's similar, therefore it can't be right, because ours is correct and theirs isn't.
Or it is a pattern I recognize.
Yeah, it could be that. It could be a pattern that you... Somebody, they already have it.
Yeah.
But, then, but the Jews don't have it. So, you know, you could use the Jewish pattern. And generally speaking, the Quran is more favorable toward Judaism than toward Christianity, but more favorable toward Christians than toward Jews.
When you say that Muhammad was added later, how much later is that?
Not very much.
Okay.
2 minutes.
No.
A generation.
I just have been. He'd given up on the Jews already. Go for the others.
No, it was after his death, I'm sure.
And, okay.
So basically, you say that Shahada is set out before La ilaha illallah is here.
No, that's the Shahada.
Yeah, but you don't say Shahada. You don't pronounce. You don't say the word Shahada.
No, you
just say...
But when you're referring to it, you say, it is the Shahada.
Shahada.
The Shahada.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you do convert to Islam, you say of your own volition in front of witnesses, La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. You say it 2 times in front of witnesses and you become a Muslim. You don't have to worry about tefillah and milah, and you just do it. Now, Muslims are circumcised. Muslim men are circumcised, but you don't have to circumcise. And it's not the same. You can circumcise at any age. I think I put this in the book. From 7 days to 13 or 18, you can circumcise at any time. So circumcision is kind of considered necessary, but it's not like, it doesn't have that kind of covenantal power that it has in Judaism.
It's in the commendable, but not obligatory category.
Yeah. Now, there were cases when Muslims forced Jews to convert to Islam, and they were forced at sword point to say the Shahadatain, the double Shahada. Jews could always say the first part of the Shahada, it would not be a problem, but it was a problem to say the second part of the Shahada. And there was a case of a rabbi in the Muslim world was asked, what do we do if we're forced to say the Shahada? You know, should we sacrifice our lives? Or should we say the Shahada? I mean, is it so abhorrent to Judaism that we should do Kiddush Hashem rather than say the Shahada? And the answer was, well, this, yes, you should say the Shahada, but you should think something a little bit different. So you can say, La ilaha illallah, no problem. And you could say, and Muhammad Rasulullah lahem. Apparently that's really true. There was at least one Jew myself. You say, La ilaha illallah and Muhammad Rasulullah. Lahem. Or Lahem. Or whatever. All right, so let's take a look at now. This is one, it's just really a nice verse from the Quran, Surah 2. Someone like to read that? Maybe we can have a reader. This is a kind of a statement of that sense of God and spirituality and unity.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like.
Do we have this one already?
Okay.
Just in one of the other papers also.
I'm sorry. Before we read, do you have the seven requirements of faith?
Oh, I didn't. Yeah, we didn't go over that. Now these are also expected. You're supposed to believe in these as well. Although people are not, these are assumptions. You should believe. You should believe in the angels. Malaika, like Malachim. Mm-hmm. The prophets. Al-Anbiya, Nabiyim. Scriptures. Al-Kitab. And final judgment. Yom ad-Din. Or Al-Yom al-Akhir. Hayom al-Akharon. Right? Or Yom al-Qiyamah. What's Yom al-Qiyamah?
Qayyum for the hours of resurrection.
Yeah, the day of resurrection. So this is like all almost like out of the playbook of linguistically of Jewish or religious terminology.
It's a defined decree and predestination is one thing, because otherwise I get six.
Oh yeah, and then final judgment, let me see. Angels, prophets, scriptures, final judgment, and divine decree and predestination, they're the same.
Are the same.
Yeah, so
what is that?
That's I think I wrote it in the book. It's better in the book than what I'll explain now, I think. But okay. It's that you're supposed to believe that all things are predestined by God. God is omniscient and knows all, including your inside thoughts and what you will do. Mm-hmm. And yet there is a measure of volition in human behavior. And subtlety between God having to know everything and yet there is a certain level of freedom in human behavior is an issue that was debated by the theological and philosophical schools of Islam quite vehemently, and it resulted in inquisitions where people were the one side that was more in favor of the God knows everything, we don't have volition, when that position became the position of the caliph, or the emperor, then oy vavoy to those people who said that wasn't correct. And there was a period of time when it went the opposite direction, and the caliph was followed that position, and it was oy vavoy lahem who believed in total predestination and not. So that was an issue that's always been problematic. They really have, you know, they're confronted. They're trying to be much more consistent than Jews, because we don't put so much money on the issue of theological correctness. Our money is on behavior and responding to mitzvot. And Muslims are more into theological correctness, and they were very Hellenistic and very syllogistic about their proofs. And you can't have it both ways. You can't have God, you know, from a syllogistic perspective, you can't have God knowing everything very well. At least you can't convince people, enough a wide swath of people, and then have real freedom of whatever it's called. Was it freedom of?
It's Maimonides.
Free will. Yeah.
It's Maimonides who has this discussion and then puts in the text to say, you know, you shouldn't talk to people about this because it will just confuse.
Yeah.
This is something for great thinkers and not.
Yeah, the rabbi said it though. They said Hakol Tzafui, the Harishu Mituna.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we didn't worry about it. We just said, okay, you know, we can live with contradiction, which is good. If you can live with contradiction, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's insolvable. Well, you just kind of find out what it's like.
The Torah is built on it. I mean, the Joseph story, where it's already, as it were, predestined that they would go down, that we slay someone, and then come back. You know. Still, the free will of the people who cause it to happen, at least.
Yeah, but then still, you can't solve it. What does God know about it?
You don't solve it.
You can't solve it. No, but there's a tendency to want to solve it.
Live with uncertainty, we talked about. Order is geen God dan heden levende, de standvastige. Sluimen we nog slaapt op een ambten. Hij behoort wat in de hemelen en wat op aarde is. Wie is het die zonder zijn toestemming bij hem zou kunnen bemiddelen? Hij weet wat voor hen is en wat achter hen is. En zij bevatten niets van zijn kennis, waarde dan wat hij wil. Zijn troon strekt zich uit over de hemelen en de aarde. Hij is harder niets waar bij die in stand te houden. Hij is de verhevene, de geweldige.
Het doet me heel erg denken aan Shabbos service?
Yes.
He
doesn't
have slavery, then
he's slapping.
He
doesn't
sleep and he doesn't.
Mm. Yes. Loyanu veloyashim, loyashan. Yeah.
Same.
Umeimitu that's not in this one, but there's, that also is Al Hayul Kayum and.
I read the in Dutch because I thought this reminds me more of our text than the English translation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any comments or thoughts about this?
Well, it sounds familiar.
Well, it's interesting that it said in our tradition it says don't try to understand what is beyond, and here it says you cannot comprehend. He knows what's before them. He knows what's behind them, but they cannot comprehend it.
Except what he tells them, what he pleases.
It's strange because at the same time, God is presented as an entity that's completely unknowable and distant, but also very present in controlling your life now and here. And that's strange.
It's that tension. There is a text in the Quran that says God is closer to you than your jugular vein.
Yeah, you talk about that.
Yeah, and your skin says my teachers. Mm.
Closer to you than your skin. So there is this kind of sense of, and we have something similar to that, right? Where we have that God is beyond knowing, is so powerful and so unreachable, and at the other hand, God is intimate, and it's there is that. You don't think so?
Both exist, but I'm not sure it's in the same text, or even in the same way of thinking.
Sorry. I don't see the feminine so much here, except for the. I mean, it's much more. I agree with you. It's much more. God is great and tremendous out there, mm-hmm. and God doesn't sleep or slumber, and God never wearies of protecting us. But that's God. And later you get an image.
Sorry.
I don't.
I missed what you said.
Well, there are two roles. For
yes.
God.
Yeah.
One is to be far away, unknown.
The transcendent and the immanent, yes.
Okay, transcendent and immanent.
Yeah.
But it's I don't like the terms, because they're just terms and don't tell me what it is.
No, what do you think?
So there's one God who is making me, for instance, the El Al, a plane, about to crash. That had to make a safety landing. I'm on this list, this email list, and 4 in the morning I get this email, please save the name because this plane is in trouble. And
when did this happen?
Yesterday.
Oh, I didn't know about this email.
Yeah.
And that, every half hour or so there was another message, and please save the name. And now they are losing petrol and starting preparing to have a landing.
Where was this?
What
is it? They went from Tel Aviv to America, but they didn't get very far.
They didn't get far. They had problems with the landing, the wheels that didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to
emergency
landing.
70 ambulances at the airport.
And back in
Tel Aviv?
Yeah, but they had to get rid of the petrol first.
I see.
Whatever it is they
burned.
So every half hour, I didn't see my email for in the morning, but after that, there was this message, please say to him, and then a bit later, there was this message, thank you all for your prayers and your daily, and it worked.
Thanks, God.
Thanks to the pilot also. Yes.
So, that image of God, that of God who is actually controlling how the pilot is managing to put the plane to the ground without the wheels, is very different from the God who is controlling our everyday life, or the God that is.
Sitting up there and looking down, saying,
unknowable. not even your prayers. Yeah, well, the email list needs my prayers. it's also my people.
They were American time, yeah.
And,
they were American
time. But they had a very interesting kind of time. So these two, it's very difficult to really understand them at the same time.
Yes.
So,
which is why individually they are put together in several places.
Maybe in the liturgy.
Yes.
But in philosophy, I don't think so.
No, but philosophy is the opposite of religion.
What about in the Tanakh? Do we have, I'm just blanking, we have cases where God is both immanent and transcendent?
At the same time.
Mm-hmm. Or any reference to?
Well, you could. There's
Tehillim or something?
There's the point where Moshe says, show me your face. Mm-hmm. You have to stand on the rock, and I'll show you my back, but I can't show you my face. And there's sort of this, the interaction, but there's the.
I don't see that as being that case. No. I see it both. That is very in the imminent. Both are very much in the imminent category. But
the danger is also what's happening here.
Yeah. But so maybe it's just kind of impossible.
Both.
Yeah. Jesus is always he's the imminent aspect of God, right?
Mm-hmm.
The human, flesh and blood, suffering, one.
I think if you, it's only in our thinking that we put them apart, because if you think about the imminent, or you start thinking about what would actually be what works in the imminent, then you lose any sort of idea of comprehension. So it's more like a matter of language to separate them than different modes of my being experiencing the imminent and then thinking about what would be acting on me and think, oh, I don't understand it at all. It must be something really far, far away. Am I clear? The imminent and the transcendent are thinking two modes of experiencing the modes in themselves seem to exclude each other, but I'm not very clear about
it. All one.
I flip over all the time, you know, feeling, oh, great, wonderful, but I don't understand the damn thing.
Flip over, flip out.
Yeah, both. thanks, flipping out, I'm flipping over all the time.
That's better. Okay, let's go to the next pillar, which is Salah. Did we talk about the long A?
Yeah.
Okay, Salah. Slota.
Oh.
Right. Pit kabel sloton uva uton. Okay. So, let's just have a reader to read this. And Maya, how do you feel about reading this?
Establish worship. Bring the zakat and bow your heads with those who bow. Seek help in patience and prayer. This truly heart, except for the humble. From wherever you go forth, turn your face in the direction of the sacred mosque, and wherever you are, turn your faces in its direction. O believers, seek help in patience and prayer. God is with those who patiently endure. Remember the prayers and the middle prayer, and stands reverently to God. If you are afraid, then pray either on foot or mounted. Then, when you are secure, remember God as He taught you what you did not know.
Yeah. So what do you think of that?
Well, when you're afraid, then pray either on foot or mounted. That's very much what's in the Talmud about
Mm-hmm. What about directionality?
And why is the zakat mentioned here?
It's oftentimes there are certain rhetorical associations of duties that occur together, and one of them is salah and zakat. Zakat, salah, often.
But I thought zakat would be one of the five.
It is. But there are a lot of other contexts in which zakat and salah occur. Want to take the next one? Kenan, you want to do that one?
Okay. Women.
Right.
Oh, believer, this is not related to what we're going to read. Oh, believer, do not enter into prayer intoxicated until you know what you say, nor ritually unclean unless you be traveling until you wash yourself. If you are sick or on a journey, or if one of you comes from the bathroom, or if you have touched women and do not find water, scent yourself with good scent and rub your face and your hands. God has become forgiving, pardon. Context is one of going off to that. When you have performed prayer, remember God standing, sitting, or lying on your side. Afterwards, when you feel secure again, observe the prayer. Prayer is something commanded for believers at stated times.
Okay. So
clean.
Well, that's interesting. Afterwards, when you feel secure again, which means when praying, you don't feel secure.
No.
Or is it the battle, not the battle?
I think it's again when you're being threatened by enemies.
Yeah, if you're obligated to pray at certain times, and the time happens to be in the middle of the battle, then what are you going to do? Because if you want to be successful in battle, you need to pray to God. But if you have to do it in a kind of spiritual manner, then it's going to be hard to do if you're fighting. And you're not yotze by just thinking prayers. You have to actually go and do the cycle, the prayer cycle. And you can't fight into the prayer cycle.
Well, how do you know that? We haven't read that
yet. Oh, okay, yes, all right. So it seems to assume that there is some kind of ritual requirement that is pretty rigid. And in Islam today, there is. In Islam today, there are two kinds of prayers. There's salah, which is prayer, and then there's dua, which is a different kind of prayer. The salah are the required prayers, the du'a are not required. So the five times a day is called salah, and the du'a is another kind of set of prayers. And there are all kinds of different ways to do that. Through zikr, or through just personal prayer. You can do it in any position you want to. You don't have to do it in that system. So I guess, to me, reading this, there's no... I would assume, and then maybe I'm reading back into it, I would assume that this is assuming a certain ritual needs to be done in order to be yotze. I mean, it
but
does...
Yeah, that must be observed in prayer. That is...
Where it says, Uqimu Salah, right? It says, observe the prayer, yeah.
That must be some standard way to perform the prayer.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, but it's sort of... Afterwards, when you feel secure again, observe the prayer, which means when you don't feel safe, when you're in the middle of the battle, you don't have to. That's my overview.
Yeah,
these steps are very explicit about the prayer. I think we probably have found it, and not it's enough. So I think also here you see a development in the religion.
What do we have
to do? It's very, there's almost nothing on the prayer.
We have very specific instructions for prayer in Tanakh, extremely specific.
Moshe,
but it's offerings. It's prayer, very specific. What kind of offerings? When is it done? How is it done? In lots and lots of details. But that's just a different style of prayer.
Yeah.
If prayer is efficacious, and it's there's a certain, I guess, mechanical. I'm just thinking out loud. It seems to me that. In an ancient and a traditional world, there is a kind of an assumption that prayer is efficacious. I mean, it does accomplish something, and it accomplishes something when you do it right. So that's certainly presumed in the sacrifices. And I guess also with personal prayer also. So that seems to be, then if you don't do it right, if you don't offer the right sacrifice, you don't do it correctly. If you don't do the right mixture of whatever the mincha is, that's not correct. But also if you don't do the right personal prayer, it's also not right. And that might be defined in choreography of how you pray. If you stand, you sit, that's very much an Islamic perspective. Right? Or it might be the use of particular formulas, word formulas, that sort of bring on a result. It's very anthropological, not
also
theological.
Emphasis on cleanness, it's very similar.
Very similar. Yeah, very similar.
Yeah, it is like a ritual. It is like a ritual in a temple.
Yeah, Tara and Tum'a.
Yeah.
So, what does it say about praying when you're intoxicated?
What do they mean by intoxicated? In the first place?
The word is really interesting. Sukkar. It's the same word. Shikkar. It's shikkar. It's exactly shikkar. Isn't that great? It's the same word.
So, it means that you are about to have.
In this one, it does. Yeah, in this one, you are.
Mm-hmm. No,
it's
the spiritual angels.
Is it only alcohol? That's what we always suppose. Or is it also drugs?
The assumption is here. I think it is seems to be alcohol. Later on, they include other, like even coffee was forbidden for a while. And yeah, there was a big, there was a very interesting machloket on the problem of coffee, because coffee, do you know the story?
Yes,
I did. It came across the Red Sea from Ethiopia to Arabia, and it was a stimulant. And so some of the poskim said, no, you can't have a stimulant, it's not good, it's not really under control. And then it began to be used by Sufis who were staying up late at night in order to pray. And so they said it was okay because it was put to good use, so coffee was okay. And theoretically, in some communities say that smoking hashish is not so bad. It's not at the level of alcohol. And others say it is bad. Some say chewing kat is not bad. And others say it is bad. So I guess in Yemen they probably say it's not so bad.
Well, we're the biggest export of leaves nowadays.
Yemen?
No.
Oh, really?
Of 20 mosques. Really only export.
Staying up all night to learn Shavuot. That came up at the same time that coffee reached Israel.
Oh, really?
Which could be a coincidence.
Oh, really?
But also it could not be a coincidence.
What years in Surah 4, it says, after prayer, remember God. What sort of word is that? Is it zikr here?
Where is it? One of?
Context is one of Gongba. When you have performed prayer, remember God standing, sitting, or lying on your sides. In Surah 4.
Oh, afterwards when you feel sick again, observe the prayer? Or which?
No, when you have performed the prayer.
When you have performed the prayer, remember God. Yeah, it's Adhkur.
It's Zikr.
Adhkurullah.
It's
Yeah, it's the same word as
Zikr.
Yeah.
Okay.
Adhkurullah. Yeah.
So Zikr is not the same as prayer.
No, it's not the same.
Very different.
It's not the same as prayer. Okay. And that, I don't actually know. This looks like it would be a proof text for engaging in Zikrs. And remember that, keep in mind that the Wahhabis don't like Zikrs. They don't like Sufis doing that. That's not a good thing.
I know, yeah.
So the Sufis would then say, well, here's the Salah, that's required. And then it says, now continue.
Continue doing it. You know, I was wondering if it was Zikr or Wasifa, or whether it was because they're two different forms.
Is it okay to take a break now?
Yes, very good.
Lying, sitting, or
okay.
Lying, standing up.
Just